Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 14, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to be picking up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Luke, and we'll be picking up on Luke chapter 22, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 22. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover, and the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, for they feared the people. Then entered Satan into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of the 12, and he went his way and communed with the chief priests and captains how he might betray him unto them. And they were glad, and covenanted to give him money. And he promised, and sought opportunity to betray him unto them in the absence of the multitude. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John, saying, Go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat. And they said unto him, Where wilt thou that we prepare? And he said unto them, Behold, when ye are entered into the city, there shall a man meet you bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he entereth in. And ye shall say unto the goodman of the house, The master saith unto thee, Where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he shall show you a large upper room furnished. There make ready. And they went and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. And he took the cup and gave thanks and said, Take this, and divide it among yourselves. For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come. And he took bread, and gave thanks, and brake it, and gave unto them, saying, This is my body, which is given for you. This do in remembrance of me. Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, This cup is the new testament in my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goeth, as it was determined. But woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he said unto them, The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. And they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat, or he that serveth? Is not he that sitteth at meat? But I am among you as he that serveth. Ye are they which have continued with me in my temptations. And I appoint unto you a kingdom, as my Father hath appointed unto me, that ye may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. And he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee both into prison and to death. And he said, I tell thee, Peter, The cock shall not crow this day before that thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. And he said unto them, When I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said, Nothing. Then said he unto them, But now, he that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. For I say unto you, that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned among the transgressors. For the things concerning me have an end. And they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. And he said unto them, It is enough. And he came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said unto them, Pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as it were great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer, and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow, and said unto them, Why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. And while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the twelve, went before them, and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? When they which were about him saw what would follow, they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And Jesus answered and said, Suffer ye thus far. And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said unto the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders which were come to him, Be ye come out as against a thief, with swords and staves? When I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me. But this is your hour and the power of darkness. Then took they him and led him, and brought him into the high priest's house, and Peter followed afar off. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall, and were set down together, Peter sat down among them. But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire, and earnestly looked upon him, and said, This man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, Woman, I know him not. And after a little while another saw him, and said, Thou art also of them. And Peter said, Man, I am not. And about the space of 1 hour after, another confidently affirmed, saying, Of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, Man, I know not what thou sayest. And immediately, while he yet spake, the cock crew. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. And the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, Prophesy, who is it that smote thee? And many other things blasphemously spake they against him. And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, Art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, If I tell you, ye will not believe. And if I also ask you, ye will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then said they all, Art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, Ye say that I am. And they said, What need we any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth.
Terry, do we have any questions or any announcements? I see Jan's not here tonight. I think he's traveling, isn't he?
Yes, he's traveling, and we have one question. And it's a simple question with a bunch of stuff behind it. It says, can you read this to NLA listeners? And then there's about six or seven sentences beyond that. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, I think I saw that. Go right ahead.
The people are rising in every county and every state with an extremely easy way to end unlawful practices of their elected officials by putting a claim against their surety bonds. Only three steps. The website to see this is bondsforthewind.com. The Telegram page to see how fast this is working is Bonds for the Wind Telegram channel. It's working. NLA members know this is working with the elected officials and sheriffs. The main Telegram page has all the templates for people. The main Telegram channel has templates, and they made a specific page for each state so people in the state can work together. Bonds for the Wind, state by state. And then it has a link there, but I think it's pretty easy to find. And after all your hard work and love for the people, you deserve to know this. God bless you all. That's it.
Okay, and what was the link again?
https://bondsforthewind, all one word, .com/telegram-state-groups.
Okay, well, all you really need is Telegram. No, not Telegram, but bondsforthewind.com.
Yeah.
And, I was looking at that page. I saw that message. I was looking at that page. It looks pretty good. You know, we often, when we write our papers to file into the court, one of the things we do is we accept the bonds of all the officers within the court. That kind of puts them on notice. We suspect they don't like to hear that. But it's interesting. It appears that, we can go and start placing a claim on those bonds as we go to do a lawsuit. You know, in a court of law, and when they assault and take control of those courts and bring us into courts unknown, some kind of a civil court, courts of equity or something, we don't even know what, and they don't tell us either. They never do tell us what court we're in. I know the last case I was arguing in was a federal case, and we had two or three hearings. And at every hearing, I always asked, "What court are we in? What's the jurisdiction?" And they refused to say, the judge refused to say. And the last time I was in that court, and at the end of the hearing, again I asked, "Are you going to tell me what jurisdiction we're in?" And the judge just said, no, I'm not going to tell you. I couldn't believe my ears, but that's what they did. It's very interesting because I think I'm going to look deeper into that. I was looking at that website. It looks fascinating. Apparently you have to find out where the bonds are, you know. If you ask them, I know here in New York we've asked many of the judges about their bonds, and they always refused to talk with us. We did call down to New York City, where there's eight judges that kind of control all of the courts, is sort of in one fashion or another, the chief judges, I guess you call them. And finally, we did get an answer from them, and they said that that New York State judges don't have bonds, that the people back them up. So isn't that interesting? They violate the people. And then the people have to pay themselves back if they pull their bonds. Now, we've never went to the process of pulling the bonds, and I think I'm, again, going to look further into that, and then once I understand it better, I'll be talking somewhat about it. But again, that website is an interesting website. It's not a very complex website. It's clear, to the point, gives you steps, and it gives you the law, not only in the federal requirement of a bond, but it also gives you the requirement on each of the states. So you got all the information. The big question, and they started talking, I was reading about how you would locate some of these people, you know, whoever would write the bonds up for them. But I haven't gotten too far through that yet. And I don't know how difficult it'll be, because they don't want you to know that, that they're bonded, and they don't want you to go lean up against that bond as you sue them. You know, again, in a court of law, when you open up a court of law and that court hijacks you to another court, that's an inferior court. And you can sue, instead of appealing to that court, you can sue that court directly. And that's very important. I know we've written papers on this, and I'm putting together a book. I mentioned this last week and the week before, and I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to be calling it, but something like Court Access and the Common Law, something like that. But I'm going to lay out everything, how to access the process and the courts, and I'll probably do something on the bonds also. I'll write probably something about the bonds and on that, and the different types of cases, maybe different positions that people could take. But anyway, hopefully that will come about in the next month or so. I've been working on it about a week now, and it's going to take me a little while. Maybe it's going to be a month really to get the whole book together. And this time I'm not going to go through a company to have it put out there. I'm going to go up probably to Amazon and probably put it up on Amazon. But we'll see what happens. And there's nothing else. No other questions. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 to get into the queue. There's no one in the queue right now, but it's *6 and 1. It is no announcements, Derry?
No, none that I have, and Brent is attending.
Okay, great. All right, again, queue is open. *6 and 1. Nobody in the queue right now. We got one person in the queue, so we'll take the first person, Thomas. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Thomas.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
Good. So we are up here in Loudoun County, and we are very excited to start a committee of safety here in Loudoun. We want to call it the Loudoun Committee. And we have a group, a small group of gentlemen interested. And there have been some concerns about just, I guess, being safe, doing a committee of safety, mm-hmm. having retaliation from the community and how to best go about the committee of safety. So, for example, we've printed off a number of pages from the committee of safety handbook, the meeting minutes, how to run a meeting, introduction to the committee of safety, et cetera, organizing the committee of safety. And frankly, we're chomping at the bit. And we're very interested in getting started. We wanted to find out what's working with other committees, if anyone has some input, or if there's a way to allay any concerns that we may have. Because we're here in a county that is, for all intents and purposes, socialist Democrat. It was infused with Soros cash, and there's a lot of really bad people in powerful positions here at the county level. So we want to establish the committee in the right way, and I see that your material is really excellent. But we want to get started. We want to make sure that we have support from people who've done this and experienced what it's like to do it and get some coaching.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know, we are kind of just starting this. There are quite a few committees of safety that have established themselves, or it's starting a process anyway. They're in the beginning stages. I'm not too aware of anyone that has actually gotten to the point of maturity and started to connect with the sheriff and is working with the sheriff yet. And not to say that that hasn't happened yet, but I haven't heard that yet. So indeed, anybody who is building committees of safety and they've hit a certain process, a certain point, please by all means come together and share with us that information and some of your experiences and thoughts. I would like to say that, you know, we're just talking about the bond, pulling the bond, and that's something I think is very, very interesting and important that you can start doing on a local end. Well, but before you do things like that, you want to have enough people together. I would suspect strongly that, you know, first of all, we know that the Democrats are really housing this major problem that we have with subversion against the United States by enemies, both foreign and domestic, and they're using the Democratic Party in order to leverage that process. But the Republican Party is used also. It's just not as obvious as it is with the Democratic Party. And you may have a large Democratic area. And remember what Jefferson had said, which holds true. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So the wheel that sounds the loudest seems to be the most populous or the most strongest hold on whatever's going on. And I think it's really a paper tiger. I mean, I come from New York City, and New York City is very, very heavily Democrat. I mean, all the boroughs, very deeply Democrats. But not necessarily all those people were liberal. Most people I've known down in New York City in the past and even in the present now, most people I know really are kind of focused towards more of a conservative leaning than a liberal leaning, although they are Democrats. So the hardcore Democrats that have taken control of our local governments and our state government and our federal government, you know, they just have a louder voice. They've got no more money. They're more active. They're more organized. They're methodical. There is a conspiracy, well-greased, well-organized conspiracy to destroy our nation from every level. And they're executing it, and they've controlled the narrative, they control the education, they control the political system, they control the judicial system, literally control the judicial system. They control all of the major things in our lives, even religions to a certain degree. There's a lot of control there, too. So they appear to be the biggest and the most populous, but ultimately they're just the most active. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. It is true, people are kind of brainwashed to certain things, but when it comes to the real radical things that is going on that we're starting to really see publicly happening, and people are responding to, you know, people are realizing there's some kind of a serious problem here that they hadn't realized before because now it's become so obvious. They have nowhere to hide. They have no cover story. They have no emergency to put the focus of the people on as they do their dastardly deeds over here and try to get the people to look over there. But the key thing is this, is organizing in the open, working on your paperwork, filing it with the county and with the sheriff when you meet with your sheriff and get your sheriff on long. And the key thing is getting the sheriff on board with you. And again, providing that the sheriff has been somewhat primed, and that's why we have the campaign for constitutional sheriffs going on where people are purchasing books for their sheriffs, and we would deliver them with a letter from Sheriff Darr and also from National Liberty Alliance. And that sort of primes your sheriff, preparing that sheriff, that person, for the time when, of course, the Committee of Safety organizes enough to approach the sheriff. And again, you should organize yourself well enough to approach the sheriff. You shouldn't be only two or three or four people yet. You shouldn't really do anything until you've organized yourself and wrote out the necessary paperwork, making resolutions, a charter, and the resolutions, and preparing it all together. That's what you would file with the county and the county clerk, and also then give a copy to the sheriff. And at that point, of course, ask him if he's got the book, as he's been looking at the book, and you give him some time. Say, we'd like you to come and talk with us at the next meeting, which should be roughly a month away, so that sheriff has plenty of time. Take a look at your charter and your resolutions, see who you are, what you're doing. And the resolution is a very powerful resolution that we put together. It's a framework, and again, people need to add things as they see it necessary. But we wrote just the framework, which I think anybody who'd have read it would agree. It's pretty powerful. It's strong. It's very focused on the, you know, we as the people, we the people, and the republic that we are, and a lawful people. The sheriff should see that group as a support, a community support group that's going to support that sheriff, you know, for the next election and while they're in office to be behind that sheriff. But again, once you close in on the sheriff and you get the sheriff to realize what's going on and what needs to be done, and he starts to participate as, you know, as at his abilities, you also then, that's when you want to start visiting local governments after that. And again,
so John,
Yeah,
I have a question, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of take it to the next layer, so what we're seeing right now with the DHS, the CIA, the FBI, the rhetoric that's coming out of the Biden administration at the moment is basically opening up a Pandora's box of calling people who are patriots insurrectionists, whilst also you have the news that's come out about Clinton and the Democrat operatives and what they've done. So it seems like there's this climate out there. And I don't know if this is the appropriate venue for this, John, but
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the concerns that we have, just to take you back a few conversations, we have a lot of information about the what we believe to be criminality in our electoral process here in Loudoun County. Loudoun County has also become ground zero for critical theory, and a group of friends of ours just placed over 500 signed affidavits before the Loudoun County School Board. That's a big brouhaha, and just tonight we heard that one of the school board members was accused of inappropriate sexual behavior with someone in the school district. So the whole thing, that's unraveling. But I think the concern with some of our guys, our information is so pointed and so focused that organizing this in the climate of the DHS coming after people who are talking like patriots. Has there been any groups that you're aware of who have formed committees of safety? Have they addressed this? And is there a defensive posture or a vigilance or diligence that we can have as we go about doing this committee of safety?
Well, you know, I believe it was, Brent had made a mention before, I may, similar to, you know, what, how do you defeat lawlessness? I'm going to botch it up if he says it much better than I do. But you defeat lawlessness with the law, okay? And we're lawful, and that's the key. If you read through all of our paperwork, you read through everything we're doing, you'll see it's all founded in history. That should help to really secure your concerns about that, at least to a major degree anyway. But I do know that they're coming out after patriots. Look, I'm aware I've been a target for over 20 years because I've been involved with this over 20 years. And I've been visited by the FBI on three different occasions. I've even had the Department of Treasury come down to have a conversation with me. And they asked me about certain things, if I said certain things. And they had papers with them, you know. And I says, well, why don't you read what I said? And they read what I said. And I says, well, who actually said that? And I showed them the footnotes. See, everything we do, or everything I do, every paper I write, I account, you know, I put a footnote in to lay out where it is that documented where that statement comes from. And it would be Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin. Anyway, my point is this, on the foot soldiers, so to speak, that come out to kind of see what's going on, they're told terrible things and they're going out to investigate, and they come on, and if you're truthful and honest with them, in most cases, at least in all of the cases, again, four different instances for me, three at the FBI, one with the Treasury, they all, you know, had a good conversation with them, they agreed with what I was saying, they saw who was making the statements. And that's the point. We're doing only what our founding fathers were doing. And we're saying things that our founding fathers had said, or the United States Supreme Court has said, or other patriots. And so, you know, we have a good foundation to rest upon. Now, you know, one of the other things, they play upon our fear, and we can't afford to cower out on this. We have to stand up. There has to be some point, you know, as Patrick Henry put it, to give me liberty or give me death. You have to come to that, really, that kind of an attitude, I think, at least the people who are really spearheading this focus, if that concern is out there. You know, we are casualties of war. People are losing their homes. They're losing their thing, you know, their property. I mean, you know, the monies are being seized. Look what they did. They seized, I think it was $10 million that was going to the truckers through one of those you know, places where they gather money and people would donate. I forget the names of those things, but in any event, what was that?
GoFundMe, and then they
you
also
GoFundMe, right?
Just
now, I think I'm a little concerned about that, and not only for what the government is trying to do or did do out you know out in Canada, and I know they went through another one. Which the other GoFundMe program or whatever it was, you know, responded back that you know we're not governed by the government. We're going to give the people the money. But you know, I'm concerned about that money because I understand there's four individuals, and I haven't seen any plan on what that money is being used for. And it's quite a bit of money. I understand they've already collected another $10 million that quickly on the other. And the suggestion was to the other people cancel the money, and on the other place where they wouldn't release it. But here's the thing, and this happened with the Tea Parties. I remember I was involved very early in the Tea Parties. I was right up there up front with a lot of people, and there was a lot of rumbling and concern about someone that might try to take over, you know, on the national end. So there was a concern and a watch for that. And lo and behold, within months, all of a sudden, some people rise up. They got millions of dollars. They've got, and they're saying that they are the face of the Tea Party, and to some degree, that's how they take things over. And even if the people that are maybe encouraged to take it over, they may have good intentions and good wills, but they always end up hiring a bar attorney. And guess what? The bar attorney is going to make sure that you conform, because ultimately, the bar attorney is going to be obedient to the judge and serve the judge. Before he will serve the people that he's supposed to represent. And I suspect maybe with these truckers, same kind of thing is happening there. I think there's some attorneys behind it, or the people maybe are doing this in a good intention, but eventually they'll be driven to be controlled by attorneys because there's going to be legal things going on, and they're going to lose total control. But the big question is, you know, when you collect that kind of money, and maybe it's out there, I'm not aware of it. I was listening to Amazing Polly, who has put up three programs on this already, and she voiced the same concern and opinion, but she still hasn't gotten an answer on what they intend to do with that money. Where is that money? Who gets that money? I mean, that money should have already been acknowledged to be going to the truckers, maybe to assist in the necessities that they need for, you know, whatever the cost, you know, they're out there right now, and I'm sure they need food, they need all kinds of things, and some kind of support. But anyway, getting back to where we're at here, I don't see that the FBI is going to be that big a deal on you. The CIA, of course, even though we know they're operating in the United States, they don't show themselves straight out because it's illegal for them to be showing themselves straight out. But I've always had good results with the FBI and the Treasury as far as the foot soldiers, the agents that actually came out to do the investigation. I mean, I suspected when they came knocking on my door, you know, the way they acted and the way they postured themselves. There was three of them that came at one time, and one was kind of invisible, so to speak, hiding away. But anyway, I invited them all into the house. I had no problem with that. And I answered every one of their questions. And because I have nothing to hide, and I explained on where my understanding comes from, and I just got nothing but agreements. All of that at some point is going to collapse. Are people going to get arrested? You know, with what we're doing, we haven't had that problem yet. We have had three different groups of people that have come in to National Liberty Alliance and hijacked our. What we were doing, we were able to see it quite quickly what they were doing, and we, as a matter of fact, if you go up to our website underneath our welcome tab, you'll find disclaimers, and those disclaimers, which I'm showing right on the page right now, those disclaimers are from people who have tried to hijack the things we're doing, and again, some of those people, there were people out, I think it was in Colorado, they actually did get arrested, and they were following the things that Anna von Ritz was doing, which is similar to us, but has nothing to do with us. We were a totally different focus from what we're doing and what she's putting along. We were approached by her quite some time ago when she first came out. What was amazing about her was she seemed to have a lot of money and a lot of funds. And she seemed to be everywhere. As soon as she came out into onto the stage, so to speak, she seemed to be everywhere. And they were trying to fuse together with us, but they were doing things that we didn't see as being constitutional, patriotic, and the way our founding fathers did it. So, I don't see any problems, but again, here is the major, major key, okay? They will not go up against the sheriffs. They might go up after one sheriff, but they're not going to go up after two or three or four sheriffs. That's why it's important for sheriffs to work together county to county when they do things like this, that they stand up against the federal government or whatever the case may be, especially in today's environment. We had Sheriff Mack who spoke about this, and I believe there were three other sheriffs working with Sheriff Mack, and they decided to, prevent the feds from coming into their counties to bring these illegal warrants and different things, and they cut them off at the pass, so to speak, the way he put it, and sent them on their way, and they left because they weren't going up against us, he said. You're not going to go up against the sheriff. Again, they might go after one, but they're not going to go after a group of them. And that's why it's so important to the first order of business to establish that relationship with the sheriff. If the sheriff sees what you are doing, and again, this is where the book comes in, an important play of the book, because the book really lays out with lots of documentation, thousands of footnotes in it, laying out exactly where this information and knowledge comes from. And they start to see this is lawful, this is patriotic. It's what our founding fathers did. We're upholding our unalienable rights that has been codified to be protected by the Bill of Rights. Once they see that whole thing, and they also see you as a voters base too, that's going to support a sheriff that is upholding the law. I think you've got a really good foundation and a protection set up there at that point. The other thing is if you approach the towns correctly, and maybe we need to do some writing about that, but you don't want to go in to assault the different governments that you're going to approach. There's village, there's town, there's city governments, there's the county government, and even eventually the state. And the state should be, dealt with collectively, multiple counties within the state to go up and deal with the state, to talk with the state legislators, to talk with the governor, to put them back under the chains of the Constitution, so to speak, as Jefferson put it. But once you start, you got the sheriff with you, and you bring in correction, and you're not doing it in a very orderly way, you're doing it in a very nice way, you're doing it with holding an olive branch, not assaultive, you're coming in with the olive branch. I think a lot of the towns, and they're going to conform, they're going to see the error of their way, because they're made up of the people, our neighbors, regular people. Are there socialists among them and people who are? Absolutely. But I don't think there's as many as we think, okay? The numbers, they just scream loud. The silent majority, so to speak, is awoken. And you can see that the multitudes, the people, really are on the side, of course, of the Constitution and our republic. Although they don't understand we're a republic, and that's our job to make sure that they do understand that we are a republic and not a democracy. A democracy was despised by our founding fathers. You don't find the word democracy anywhere in our founding documents. And they did speak about the democracies in the Federalist Papers, and they wanted no part of it. They said it was mob rule. And many of our founding fathers made statements concerning that fact, that democracy is just mob rule. Eventually, it always sets up to become an oligarchy. That's the end results of a democracy. And that's the purpose of a democracy, really.
John.
Yeah.
Why don't I just cut to the chase here and help Thomas out a little bit. Thomas, I've got two folks here that will be glad to talk to you. They both have established committees of safety, and they may be able to help you with your question. So I've got your phone number, I've got your name, and I'll have
them. Are they here tonight? Can they come on and talk? Because
no.
I think it's good for everyone to hear.
No.
No? They're not here?
No.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, is this Jan?
This is Francine.
Francine,
thank you, Francine, for doing
You're
that.
Very
yeah,
welcome.
And thank, too. So yeah, we have a really strong group, but we want to feel as though, or we want to understand what other groups have done, and we don't want to be the bushwhacking group. Although once we learn what we need to do, we will share with everybody, especially in our state, but also across states, because, you know, I firmly believe in what you've written here, John, with the things that you've done are absolutely rooted in the Constitution, and it's all right here. It's there to read. So the reality for us is we're neophytes, and we don't want to stub our toe and get the help. So I appreciate, Francine, I appreciate that. I'm Tom Kasparek at protonmail.com.
Right, so, I've got your information.
Yeah, when you guys talk, Francine has your phone number there too. Maybe she can give you a call. But when you guys talk, maybe we can settle up where we can come into the room here. Maybe you do it on a Tuesday, and have a conversation that's open. Because again, it's important that other people see what others are doing, and this is the purpose of the committees of correspondence, which we're going to be trying to start organizing. Matter of fact, maybe it's time to really start pushing that organizing. We'll have to see if we can establish how many committees of safety have actually activated themselves, and try to get them involved in communications to speak.
Someone that's very seasoned on our team that is interested in that and interested in the whole movement. But also, I know he's a very generous person and he's a great communications guy. So yeah, we do have some good people. We want to pitch in. We want to know what we're doing, and we want to learn from lessons learned and move forward in earnest.
Mm-hmm. Well, do remember we are at the early stage, but apparently Francine knows a couple of people that are a little more advanced. That kind of a thing we really need. We want to be careful as not to be interpreted as a national leadership of the Committees of Safety, because the Committees of Safety should never have a national leadership. They should be like the colonies who come together and work out the problems. And in the cases, county to county, work out the problems, and county to county to county within a state to work out the problems with the state, and so on.
And that's the history of Loudoun, as I shared with you. The Virginia is really almost ground zero, except for New York and Boston area. And the committees here in 1774, they had, in this state, they had at least 29, and Maryland was one that you're quoting. So, yeah, this area was full of committees of safety, but they shared, they stayed together, they shared their information, they made resolves, and they moved forward on that.
And that's how they formed together with the Continental Congress, the first and the second one, and how they created this nation, and even how they came together to govern themselves as the colonies came together as statehoods and eventually became states of the United States and so on. And again, this is what the people need to do. But again, it must always be on the grassroots level without anyone governing it on a national level. Once that happens, then that's a problem. But we on the national end, our job really is to facilitate, educate, and to help to organize, to communicate, to help cut communications between the different groups. And then there'll be a lot more conversations probably county to county within a state, and it should be more than it would be on a national level. Although I'm going to open up a page soon when I can, and to get the time to do this, and start to put some issues up there that people need to think about on a national level, that people need to come together, county to county, state to state, across the United States, to deal with certain problems on a national level. When it comes to the voting problem and all the election problems, I wouldn't worry too much about that or put too much time into that right now. I mean, you could still continue to gather information and evidence to maybe pursue it in the future if you feel it's necessary. But I think that's all going to be dealt with soon. As a matter of fact, President Trump made some mention, because Durham has sort of surfaced and is releasing some information. And he made mention of Robert Durham. And Durham's name is not Robert or Bob. I forget what Durham's actual first name is, but what is it?
It's John.
John Durham. Oh, how can I forget that one? Okay, John Durham. But people didn't understand, and the enemy, of course, I'm sure made somewhat of a mockery of it, but he was referring to Robert Durham, the maker of the Durham boat that took Washington and his and the Patriots across to Jersey during the Revolutionary War, which was the turning point of the war. And so that was Trump's way, really, of putting a message out to the Patriots that have been following this and understand what's going on. And, I didn't know his name was Robert or Bob either, but this was brought to my attention from Dave from X22. So it's interesting. And the point is, Durham, I think, is going to bring a lot of information also on and indictments concerning what went on January 6th, as far as, before that, actually, as far as the voting is concerned, all of the fraudulent voting. So all of that is, Trump clearly is working on that, and there's a lot of activity. We're just not hearing much of it. But behind the scenes and alternative news, they are talking about it, and it's out there. It's happening, and that's going to rise. Right now, though, we do want to focus on our local problems, because, you see, I forget who it was that mentioned, and this was mentioned by many people, actually. It's not just one person. There's the Speaker of the House some years back, but he brought it up. But it was brought up before. All politics is local. Okay, control your local politics and you control your life ultimately, because, if you got the sheriff on board and he's applying the law, he's not going to allow the feds to come in to bring forth unlawful warrants. He's not going to permit that. He's going to cut them off at the pass, so to speak. So you'd be protected from the federal government's assault upon you. I know with my sheriff, who had passed away recently, he was on board with all this stuff. But I do know that his undersheriff was kind of very close with him, and I didn't know him that well. I met him once or twice. But we did get a book to him, and he was very appreciative of that, and he said he's pursuing the same positions that, the former sheriff was pursuing and working to maintain the law. So the key is working with your sheriff if you really want to feel safe and protected, because the sheriff can and will protect you. As long as he understands who you are as a people and what you're doing.
Thank you.
Okay, and again, you get that conversation going. I'd like to get it out there. Maybe we'll do it in a room and other people can join in and hear, because this is what we should be doing here on Monday nights, is talking about these things, sharing our experience, sharing our information, where we're at, how far advanced we are, and so on and so forth. So.
Yeah.
Okay, let me take, is there anyone else in the queue right now? I don't think so. Queue looks empty. Okay, well, anybody who wants to get in the queue, star 6 and a 1. I see Gerard's here and Brent is here. Brent, are you ready to go? Take the mic.
Yeah, the mic. I got it.
Okay. Hey, listen, maybe I can talk with you sometime this week. I'll give you a call. When's the best time to call you? I wanted to talk to you about, I know you published your book through Amazon directly. Is that what you did, or at least some books that way?
No, it was another. It's the big thing now is print on demand. You don't have to get 1,000 copies. You get 1,000 copies or more, they come cheaper. But if somebody orders a book, all you have to do is tell the people that print the book and type in the address to send it to, and they print it and ship it in a few days. I can tell you what I know about that. We can talk.
I'll give you a call. When's a good time to call you? The afternoon's best?
Better in the afternoon, probably.
Yeah, I'll give you a call.
If I don't answer, I'll get back to you.
Sounds good. All right, are you ready to take the mic? I'll introduce you.
Sure.
Gerard, are you ready to take the board for the second hour? You see Gerard's here.
No, but I will.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so let me introduce Brent. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of quite a few books, one of them being The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com, and Brent's going to teach us something tonight. And Gerard, you got the board. I'll be in the background. Brent?
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, one more thing. Star 6 and a 1 for anyone who wants to get into the queue. Any comments, questions, star 6 and a 1. Go ahead, Brent.
All right, thank you. This is Brent, Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Thank you to the principals of NLA for allowing me to speak. And again, as I like to say, my comments are my own. And of course, who else could they be, I suppose? But whatever I say is may or may not agree with other people that are listening or people that are the principals of NLA. But again, they're kind enough to let me talk. Well, let me start this right to the business here. Somebody gave me some of these little stories, quotes. He who never quotes is never quoted. That's my favorite quote. This is from Will Rogers. You know, Will Rogers died in 1935 in a single-engine airplane crash at Point Barrow, Alaska, with Wiley Post. Wiley Post, a one-eyed aviator from Oklahoma. Anyway, Rogers said this. He had a daily column. You can't hardly find a law school in this country that doesn't, through some inherent weakness in the school, turn out a senator or a congressman from time to time, or if their rating is really low, maybe even turn out a president. And he was speaking especially at that time, I think, of Franklin Roosevelt, who, being from an ultra-wealthy family, they sent him to law school. He barely got through, and then he failed the bar exam and ran for governor. And then he ran for president. That's really what happened. Let's see. Here's another one. This is Evel J. Younger, Attorney General of California at one time. He said, an incompetent attorney can delay a trial for years or even months. An incompetent attorney can delay a trial for years or months. A competent attorney can delay a trial even longer. Now, that makes me feel good because I've done that a lot on purpose, by the way. I mean, if somebody's really just trying to steal or trying to send an innocent man to jail, you're foolish if you don't tear them up with motions. Make them work for it. Pick apart everything you can. That's what the law's there for. Now, if it's something you can settle, you don't have no sense doing that. Well, here's another one. This is, well, Tom Jefferson, we've heard his stuff. Doctors and lawyers must go to school for years and years, often with little sleep and with great sacrifice to their first wives. The funny thing about this stuff is it's kind of true. Now, this is attributed to Theodore Roosevelt, but he's not the one that said it. I know who said this first. This was D.L. Moody, the evangelist, said this. He said, he said it this way. He said, take a man. Well, let me read what Roosevelt said, and then I'll tell you who the man who really said it. Roosevelt said, a man who never graduated from school might steal a freight car, but a man who attends college and graduates as a lawyer might steal the whole railroad. Well, the original quote from D.L. Moody was, Take a man who'll steal a bolt from a railroad track, give him a college education, and he'll steal the whole railroad. And his point was, the reason he said that was, talking about the depravity of the human heart, the conceptual nativity depravity of the human heart. That's why we have a problem in government today. People say, well, of course, we all think we'd be more honest if we were in government. I don't believe it. I can't tell you how many times I've seen and help send people to the state house. And they'd be there 6 months to a year, and next thing, you don't even know who they are. They're voting in ways that you couldn't imagine them to vote. And then making excuses. Then they get thrown out of office. Or if they have enough money, they stay there even though everybody hates them. It's the darndest thing I ever saw. Lord Dalberg, Emmerich Acton, said power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, that was Moody's point. Moody's point wasn't power never corrupted anybody. men are already corrupt. They have a taint in them that if it's exacerbated, it grows into a monster. And what does that? Power. Power. And once you got it, you think you can do what you want. Give a man a fur coat, think he's King Kong. Well, that's some of the stories about lawyers. I have a friend who says that lawyers, he said, do you know any lawyer jokes? He said, I'd say, yeah, I know some. Well, he said, I'll give you a secret. They aren't jokes at all. They're all true. Some of them are. No, most of them are. But lawyers are like spare tires. Lawyers are like spare tires. They're in the way till you need one. But I can tell you, yeah, they're in the way. Yeah, they're a pain in the neck. Yeah, they're money grubbers. Yeah, they're crooked as a dog's hind leg like most other people. They get by with whatever they can. It's not confined to lawyers. It's just that they're in a different position. But I'd stay away from them as much as possible. But it is true, just like a surgeon. You know, doctors are quacks. Dead doctors don't lie. Who was it wrote that book? Said dead doctors don't lie. And what he was saying was that doctors don't know anything about preventative medicine and they die young. And that's the truth of the matter, and that's how we know they don't know what they're doing. But it is true that when it comes to surgery, doctors can do that and maybe save lives. Of course, then you got the problem of the doctors that, like the doctor said, I only operate when it's absolutely necessary. And in this case, it's absolutely necessary because I have three children in college and I got to pay bills. Well, that happens too. But the truth is, if by chance a fellow's dying and they go to cut on him, they might save his life. Cut something out that'll kill him. They're in the way like spare tires. Of course, spare tires aren't much in the way, are they, anymore, I guess. They used to be in the trunk. They were in the way all the time. That's what I remember. Well, let's talk about the grand jury. You don't like lawyers? Okay. How do you get back at them? Well, let's start with the prosecutors. Let's start with the prosecutors. I want to talk about some bad men. They got a wrong point of view. It's a culture of the wrong point of view. And I was a prosecutor for 30 days once. 30 days! Boy, did I get an education. I filled out another fellow's term. I liked him. He got thrown out of office because he's a pretty good guy. If you're a good guy, it's hard to last in office because the people that are there, they want you to get on their team, be a part of the club, help them, send all these poor people to prison they don't like. It's power. They just love that power, and they have a little courthouse club, and that's what they do. Well, I found that out, and I found out that police officers are just like anybody else. They get tired of dealing with people, and then they get cynical, and then they get abusive. Yeah, that's what they do. That's what they do. Don't tell me they don't. Oh, but I know a cop's a good cop. Well, how come he's still a cop then? Why is he associating with those kind of people? Now I know we have to have sheriff's deputies. We have to have sheriffs. That's different. Very much different. And we want to support our sheriffs. We want to help them. Policemen. I have Sheriff Darr, this fellow that helped me teach this grand jury class. I'm going to talk about the grand jury here real quick. But Sheriff Darr said, as far as I'm concerned, he said they ought to get rid of the police and take all the money they're spending on police officers and give it to the sheriff's department. He's responsible anyway for what goes on in the cities. Those people there vote for him or don't vote for him just like anybody else. And he has a duty in the cities, and he also has discretion. And he can handle the matter much better, and I agree with him. I agree with him. Policemen are bureaucrats. Sheriffs and sheriff deputies are not. Policemen are police officers. Polis. Polis. Policy. Politics. That's the word for city. It's all about bureaucracy. Police officers, as a matter of law, have no discretion when it comes to their job. Have no discretion. To arrest. They just must arrest. If the law says this, then they're bound. And some of them don't do that all the time. But I'm talking about what the law says. They are bureaucrats. They're under bureaucratic law. The sheriff is not. The sheriff is not a police officer. We went into great detail that through the sheriff's class. And Sheriff Darr contributed to our understanding of the difference substantially. I could just turn to him and ask him a question about it, and he's got it wired. He's studied through it. I'm just glad to have him along. But we made that clear. A peace officer has discretion to arrest or not arrest, regardless of what the law says. And a policeman, as a matter of law, does not. State policeman, city policeman. The sheriffs all over the country said, I'm not going to enforce these so-called laws. Sheriffs all over the country, county boards voted, we're not going to enforce any federal gun laws in this county. Well, that's discretion, friends, neighbors, and kin, and that is the mark of a free man, the discretion to make your own distinctions, make your own decisions, and not be sworn like the policeman to substitute somebody else's discretion for yours. Well, so we're teaching this. Sheriff Darr is joining me, and we're making presentations about the grand jury. Now, if you took any one of these fundamental principles, for instance, the militia of the several states, the grand jury, the trial jury, these are things that are fundamental to our common law tradition. Fundamental. They don't exist anywhere else in the world. These are part of the law of the land. The law of the city doesn't have these kind of things and hates them. People here hate them too, but we still got them. If we would concentrate on one of these, now I've chosen, for instance, and I'm putting it together slowly in my head, but I've just chosen where I want to put my life. Where do you want to put your life? What do you want to concentrate on? Listening to pundits and getting all riled up, mad, and then listening to them again tomorrow? Well, that's okay, I suppose, but do something. Concentrate and learn and master something fundamental. You know, people that amount to anything master something. Now, something important and fundamental. And once you master something important and fundamental, you'll be able to master other things rather easily because they're all interlocked and interrelated. And once you have knowledge, you can hang more knowledge on it. But if you don't have a framework of knowledge and haven't mastered one little particular subject, I've often told the story about George Washington Carver. Remember, he was born a Negro slave. And then, by the time he was, before he was 10 years old, the war was over. I don't know how old he was. He ended up a very ambitious young lad. He wanted to go learn. School, he said he asked God when he was a little bitty boy. He asked God to show him the mystery of the universe. And he said, God said to him, not verbally, but he kind of impressed upon him, he said, George, I'm not going to show you the mystery of the universe, but I'll do this for you, George. He says, I'll show you the mystery of the peanut. And he said, after he had discovered over 300 products that could be made from the peanut and revitalize the southern states after the boll weevil wiped out the cotton crop that his family had been picking for the white man all those decades. It's kind of funny when you think about it. He rescued the whole situation down there. They've got a big statue of a boll weevil down in Enterprise, Alabama. Great big statue of a boll weevil because they said the boll weevil is what made people around here make money on peanuts. Well, that's true, but if it wasn't for George Washington Carver, there wouldn't have been a market for peanuts. And what was that fellow's name? Became president. It was a peanut farmer.
Carter.
Yeah, Carter. That guy. What? Carter owes his presidency to an ex-Negro slave, George Washington Carver, because the Carter family made a fortune on peanuts, and it never happened if it wasn't for George. Anyway, he asked God to show him the mystery of the universe. God said he'd show him the mystery of the peanut, and he said when he got older, after he had discovered all those things about the peanut, he said, finally dawned on me that by God showing me the mystery of the peanut, the mystery of the universe began to come clear. In other words, if you master one little thing, and if you learn more and more about less and less and less and less, more and more about less and less, you'll master it. You'll never get to the end of it. But then as you do that and narrow your focus and learn, then coming out the other side, you'll understand so much more about, for example, so much more about government. If you learn about the grand jury, let's say you focus on it, and you learn that, you will understand. It'll just bring in all of government. If you learn about the militia clauses, I mean, learn them. Focus on it. If you ever get motivated, you'll do that. And then you'll learn. It'll bring in to focus, to good focus, all about how our government goes. And if we would inculcate any one of these fundamentals that I've mentioned, for instance, the militia of the several states, the four militia clauses of our Constitution, the grand jury, the jury, if we would focus as a people, have a critical mass of us focus on any one of those, it would bring us out of our mess. No question. It would bring lawfulness back to our country. We're suffering from lawlessness. Well, what did Jesus Christ say? People come to him, they'll say, oh, didn't we cast out demons, and didn't we heal the dead, sick and raise the dead? And who was it, Carl Perkins, said, make the little girls go out of their heads. Didn't we do all these wonderful things, impress people? Jesus Christ said, I'll say to them, depart from me, ye practicers of lawlessness. Lawlessness. That's where it is. That's where God wants you to be. He wants you to help establish a world of true law, not just man's diaper on the head mandates and all that stupid stuff. Well, let's talk about the grand jury. The grand jury, the oath. Let's get down to the bottom here. The oath of the grand juryman, said Judge Wilson. That's Judge James Wilson of the U.S. Supreme Court, one of the three men on the first panel of the Supreme Court of the United States, an immigrant from Scotland, James Wilson. He said, the oath of the grand juryman is the commission under which he acts. That is fundamental to our understanding of the grand jury. These are the things we're going to go over, have gone over some. We're on our third week starting our grand jury class. Please go to commonlawyer.com and sign up for the grand jury class. All right, any of the other classes we got there, they're all recorded. You can listen to them. We want you to get interested in something. How do you get interested in something? Well, you take some classes. You'll see what you're interested in. And once you get interested, you'll dig in. That's the way it works. How do you know, Brent? Because I've been working that way all my life. And as I get older and older, I focus more and more and less, and I just tell you as a personal experience, I kind of like the way it works like that. Okay, so the oath of the grand juryman, said Judge Wilson, is the commission under which he acts. This statement, while undoubtedly a correct exposition of the law, as it was understood back at that time when he was Supreme Court Justice, is in our modern world of jurisprudence not comprehensive enough. That's the feeling today, and that's what people say today. But I think it's a good statement, and the simplicity of it makes it workable. Let me read it again. The oath of the grand juryman is the commission under which he acts. Well, let's read one of these oaths that were used back at that time. This is when our country started, turning our eyes toward our origins and looking there for a sign in our time of crisis. Here it is. This is the foreman, the oath of the foreman of the grand jury. You, as foreman of this inquest, that's the French word, that's what they used to call Norman French in England, you as foreman of this inquest for the body of the county of whatever county you're in, do swear or affirm that you will diligently inquire and true presentment make of such articles, matters, and things as shall be given you in charge or otherwise come to your knowledge. It's an important phrase, come to your knowledge. Whatever comes to your knowledge, friends, neighbors, and kin, makes up your conscience. Everybody's got a conscience. What does conscience mean? Con? That doesn't mean to defraud somebody. That's a Latin preposition. It means with. Con. Science. What does science mean? That's the Latin word for knowledge. Science is not a special word. It means a special thing. So this is science. You hear Fauci talk, Fauci or Fauci, whatever. whatever his name is, Patsy, talking about science. This is real science. That's just fancy words that people use to impress people. It's just knowledge, and all of us have a lot of knowledge, and whatever comes in the holes in our head, how many are there? 7? I made a mistake the other day and said 5 or something. Arithmetic, I never did good at. But knowledge is whatever's in your head, and that is what your conscience is. So he says here, as a grand juryman, whatever comes to your knowledge, touching the present service, the Commonwealth's council, your fellows and your own shall keep secret. Okay, here's the secrecy of the deliberations of the grand jury. You shall present no one for envy, hatred, or malice. Now, this sounds like something right out of the Epistle of Peter, the Apostle, in the Bible. What does he say? He says, laying aside all malice, all envy, and do what? He said, take in the seed of the Word of God. This is amazing, this language, how it's like they lifted the cadence of it right out of the Bible. Your fellows and your own shall keep secret. You shall present, I read that. Neither shall you leave any unpresented for fear, favor, or affection. What does the Bible say of judges and jurors? The Bible says, fear not. Fear not. The word means do not shy away from the face of any man. You judge the poor man just like you do the rich man. You don't give the rich man a break, and you don't give the poor man a break, and you don't give the poor man a favor, and you don't do the rich man a favor. That's what the Bible says, and that's what he's saying here. Unprecedented for fear, favor, or affection, hope of reward or gain, but shall present all things truly as they come. Here it is again, second time he said it, as they come to your knowledge, according to the best of your understanding, so help you God. That's the oath. What's it saying? It's saying you as a grand juror are to judge without favor, without fear. You are to do your duty. And whatever comes into your conscience, into your mind, from whence it comes, whether by evidence given the grand jury or your own understanding of reality that you've gathered over your lifetime, that's what you use to make your decisions. And then the oath, and then the balance, the rest of the grand jurors, they pledge themselves. That was the foreman, see. And here's the way the rest of them say it. The same oath or affirmation which the foreman has taken on his part, and every one of you shall well and truly observe on your part. In other words, whatever the oath of the foreman was, that's your oath too. Now the grand jury, and the oath of the grand jury, is of great antiquity, lost in the fog of antiquity. It goes so far back. Predates Magna Carta by far. Our common law predates Magna Carta. Magna Carta is just another solid stepping stone over the centuries in the expression of our common law tradition. When in the time of Ethelred II, when did he live? They called him Ethelred the Unready. The English never had fancy complimentary titles for their king. You know, had stuff like John. They called him John Lackland because he lost a lot of land in France. This guy's name is Ethelred the Unready. That's kind of a play on words because Ethelred's an old Anglo word that means good counsel. And unready, we don't have a word that gets the old Anglo-Saxon, but unready means, to them, it meant bad counsel. So his first name was Good Counsel, and his title was Bad Counsel. Ethelred, the Good Counsel of Bad Counsel. They just make a joke out of it, but that's what they called him. Well, anyway, this Ethelred II and the 12 Thanes, that's the Anglo-Saxon word in the other Scandinavian and Germanic countries, they called it Thing, T-H-I-N-G, the Thing. What was the Thing? Well, that was the ruling body, that was the jury, that was the elders, the white-bearded men. That's what they called them. went out, they swore upon, in those days, some religious artifact or something. They didn't have a Bible. Those were hard to get. No printing presses back then. It was given them in the hand. They would accuse no. They swore they would accuse no innocent man nor conceal a guilty man. Their oath was, we will accuse no innocent man nor will we conceal a guilty man. And in Bracton's time, which was a couple centuries later, the oath and the pledge bound the grand jurors to a similar action. But while the powers of the grand jury were much broader than they are in our own day, the oath of the grand juror was narrower in its scope. You know, when they took an oath, for example, to swear, they said this back then. We're talking, well, now over 1,000 years ago in our common law tradition, before Magna Carta. They said this, I'm quoting, I will speak the truth concerning this which you shall ask me. See, that's a little bit narrower than the oath we have on the witness stand now. We say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Well, that doesn't narrow it down much. Why did they narrow it down so much? Because of what Jesus Christ said. He said, do not swear broadly. It's exactly what he said. The Greek word there is olos. We have our word whole, our English word whole. It means do not swear wholly or broadly, I'll always tell the truth. Well, that's why they cranked it down here, because of that admonition of the Savior himself. The grand juror swore, and if the oath was his commission, then the limits of his powers were deemed by those things, limited by those things which the king's justice should ask. So they had an oath. It was like what we do today. They had a grand jury, for crying out loud. Never, no place else in the world has anybody had a grand jury. Oh, by the way, in 1935, England did away with their grand jury. Canada's done away with theirs. Australia's done away with theirs. New Zealand has done away with theirs. We are the only common law country, I think. It's hard to keep up with all the research, but I believe we're the only ones that still have grand juries. We have them at the federal level and many of the states. Well, it's amazing to go back and see that these things we do today in our common law tradition are ancient, and they've never substantively changed. And that is the reason why we have become these things of our common law. That is the reason why we have become the most powerful engine of wealth and prosperity that the world has ever known. Because of these things that people don't know anything about. Do you know anything about the grand jury? And if you tell me you do, I have a hard time believing you. I went to law school, and I wasn't told anything. Not a smidgen, a nothing about the grand jury. And then I got out to practice law, and I practiced before the grand jury. I think I told this last week maybe, but I had a older fellow tell me when I went to represent somebody that was going to go before the grand jury, I had to sit outside the jury room. There's certain things you can do, like you can have the witness ask him to come out if he wants to come out and consult with you about a question. And we did all that, and he said, if you do this, you'll be the expert. I said, why do you say that? He said, because nobody ever does this. No lawyers ever do this. I found out that to be true. Of course, the downside of that is if you do that kind of thing, they'll try to indict you. And I had that experience too. Then they drug me into the grand jury and tried to, the U.S. attorney didn't like what I was doing, so he talked the grand jury into dragging me in, a witness, and then indicting me. That's the way that works. But I did get a good education out of it. It was rather nerve-wracking at the time, I'll have to admit. But any good education is nerve-wracking. No question about that. Well, my name is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Go to the website, sign up for the class and any of the other classes that are there. Oh, and we just sent out certificates to some of the classes. We're getting started. I promised I would. They finished the classes. We've done quite a few now, and we send certificates out. And if you finish all the classes, then you become a law school graduate. I'm teaching things that I should have been taught in law school, and I wasn't. like about the grand jury, a class on the grand jury, like a class on the sheriff at common law. We taught that. And we're going to teach, Lord willing, after we do this class, we want to how to draft your own trust, common law trust document. We're going to do that. That's our next. I'm excited about that one. Thank you, John and Gerard, and God bless America. God bless America. Back
can
to you.
Can I say one thing real fast?
Oh, well, I'm not in charge, but I reckon if you want to, go ahead.
Who's that? Who's that, Terry?
Yeah, it's Terry. Yeah. I got my certificate, and there's all this flowery language and everything, and then there's this little bitty font right in the middle of this big square rectangular gray place. And I have my name. I could barely read it. Okay. Later on.
Well, see, we're learning how to do this, so if it's that bad, we can fix it. Thanks for letting me know.
Go get yourself one of those magnifiers that you lay on the page and just tape it to the middle of the thing, Harry.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. No problems, only solutions here.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, we have only one person in the queue, but before I get to, and that's our, oh, now Ross came in, but Jay's our resident truck driver, so we certainly want to talk to him. And John mentioned the truck drivers and how it looks like, you know, they're trying to break them apart. I see he's been watching the Amazing Polly videos, and she's been drawing lines and asking questions that nobody wants to ask. And yes, that's exactly what's going on, because the people that got their fingers on the money somehow, and I don't know how that happened, but they're all operatives. They're all connected to New World Order people. They're all connected to a politician. They're all connected to, you know, politics and stuff. Now, this...
Gerard, do you want the desktop?
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if I'm going to use it yet. I mean, there is a little video, but I don't know if I'm going to show it. I don't want to take too much
time.
Right,
well, I'll shut myself off, and you might want to put whatever you want on it, and I'll shut it off.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So anyway, I should put something up there besides the gray screen. Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can get my keyboard. Anyway, they collected whatever it was, $10 million, and none of it has been disbursed, and that's by design, because these truckers, some of them have $6,000 a month payments on their truck, and that fund was supposed to sustain them so that they, because they told the government, we're not leaving until you drop the mandates. And they said, well, we'll drop them the end of the month. That was the one thing that came through, and they said, the heck with you, the end of the month, you drop them now. You see, the New World Order powers that are running this thing, they don't want to admit defeat, and they want to make things look like it was done on their timeline and for their reasons, but not for the people. And they're death afraid of what's going on. They're afraid of this whole uprising. They're also afraid that if it spills across the border to America, when the people realize what's going on, the uprising in America is going to be 10 times greater than the one in Canada. They're going to have 200 million people in the streets when they realize that they have killed many of us, are dying and due to die with this terrorist shot that they gave us, which is going to cause us lots of trouble over the next 5 years, because we're going to continue to lose people at an accelerated rate. There's a lot of stuff that's already crashed that's not going to come back, because, you know, all these shortages, there's still stuff out on ships. You know, they closed down steel mills in Pennsylvania 10 years ago. You can't get them started back up because they rot and they turn to crap. And so we don't make a nut or bolt in this country. It comes from China. We're in dire straits. Now, I know that, you know, everybody says, oh, Trump's going to come in, he's going to be a hero. Trump can only do so many things. It's up to we the people. And we're going to have to figure out alternate stuff. We're going to have to figure out something besides the hospital, because the hospitals right now, they have nothing but an incentive to kill you. And they've sold out. They've sold their soul. And in order for there to be justice in this country, we're going to have all those people that were part of that, from the top guy down to the little dictator, you know, lowly nurse that was like Nurse Ratched, that wouldn't let people in the ICU to see their loved ones, or wouldn't allow them to get any other medication but what Fauci put on the protocol. Since when do we fall, and as a doctor, follow a protocol from the government on how to treat somebody? I wouldn't trust the government to treat a pimple on me, much less COVID or anything else. And that's where we're at. A lot of the doctors that have lost their job and walked off, they've opened up clinics, and they're going to start treating people. And this is a good thing, because what we'll have is we'll have actually doctors and nurses and clinics that actually care about us. And you'll pay what you can pay. Of course, the insurance companies aren't going to cover it until after it takes over the regular medical, you know, conglomerate that's sitting there that's useless, basically. So we got a lot of stuff going on, and right now you should pray for the truckers, because they need to stand to the end. Because if the government can break them and drive them out of there, and get rid of their protests and make it look like that it's their idea to end this COVID thing, when it's not. They've lost the narrative. It's falling apart. People are waking up. So they need to make it look like it's their idea. They don't want to make it like the people forced them to do it. And that's where they're at right now. So, you know, I don't know. I think that because they're so loosely, you know, they planned a lot of stuff, but they left some loose ends. That's how these guys were able to get in there and get their fingers into the pot and control the money. That was a fatal mistake for them. I think that they should set up their own grand jury. And I think the truckers should say, whatever this grand jury comes to, whatever decision it comes to, that's what we're going to abide by. And I think whoever has that money, it's not their money. It was given for the truckers. I don't care if they opened up the GoFundMe, you know, or in their name for the truckers. It was opened up for the truckers. So they need some law. They need what we're talking about in their movement, because if they don't have it, they're going to fail. And, you know, these are just regular, normal, working people. They would make a great jury. They would make a great grand jury. I think they should vote amongst themselves, 25 people as a grand jury, to take control. And even if they want to do a grand jury and a jury, and make decisions that all the truckers would be in solidarity with. Because right now, they're hanging on by a thread. And if they don't get that money, they won't be able to keep going. I watched this video with a trucker. He said, we haven't even been able to get hardly porta potties out there with this money. He said, you know, we don't even have access to the supposed porta potties they bought. So this is something that the whole world is watching. Everybody, Australia, New Zealand, all these tyrannical governments, this is their toe in the water. Whatever, you know, it could have been America, but it started in Canada. God in his wisdom started in Canada. And I think the reason it started in Canada, because the Americans right now, even though we have this great love of liberty and we believe that we're free and we have a constitution, we're too lily liver. When I see people walking around with their masks still, in spite of, if you do any research at all, you'll know that that's a lie from hell. And I mean, talk about science. You know, during the Spanish flu pandemic, they tried masks. They made laws that you had to have a mask or they throw you in jail. And you know what happened when they implemented it? They had a 1,700% increase in cases. That's a fact. And that's science right there. It's not, double blind control. No, they instituted a mandate. They enforced it, and they saw an immediate rise in cases. Later on, the science came that knew that, look at those masks are 80 microns. That anything that's a virus is like less than 2 microns. It goes right through the mask. That mask isn't saving you from anything. It's all just a symbol of control. It's all it is. and compliance, basically. So very important. We should stay on top of this. We should pray for the truckers. We should throw them our support however we can. I pray that God enlightens them to fix their administration. There is no administration. They never voted anybody, and I think that was a mistake on their part, because these people were able to go in, and there was actually, I got a really neat video. The one guy he's just a mouthpiece, but he's very happy and jovial, and he seems to be a leader. And some guy, a Mason, big Mason, he's in the government. I forget what position he owns, he holds. But he told this guy, you got in a historic position, clear that bridge off, because that bridge that they're blocking is a major bridge between Canada and the United States in the auto industry. Well, guess what? Now the millionaires are losing money. And he said, you should tell them truckers to get off of there. You could be the next prime minister of Canada. And he rubbed on him. Thank God that particular trucker had enough sense to tell him to go pound salt, that I'm not in this for that. And we're here to do exactly what we said we're going to do. And and he basically threw the letter back in his face and did not acquiesce to that. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Thomas Kasparek. I have a question.
Yeah.
So I saw something about TD America taking another group, another fund. There was Give, Send, Go, which had almost, as John referred to, almost $10 million. People are willing to give. Who's going to take control of the money so that it gets in the right hands and not stop running it through the cabal banks?
Well, that's what they have to decide. That's why they need something like a grand jury that the truckers can all agree on a team of truckers that they'll abide by.
Can I insert something here?
Yeah.
If you go to tally.co, what Dichter was saying, who was the spokesperson for the original convoy, is that they have now made that tally.co as a place where you can buy Bitcoin and give it to the truckers, and no bank is controlling that.
Well, there's a problem with the whole Bitcoin thing, because they were in the beginning, they were trying to sell truckers Bitcoin. It was the same guys that were making money on this money, and they're pushing Bitcoin, because don't forget the Great Reset. They want digital currency, so they had their fingers in that too. This whole Bitcoin thing, because ultimately, listen, they're going to control the Bitcoin. Believe me, they're not going to, if it's done by the government, if the government has any say in it at all, they're going to be able to go in there and take your money anyway and shut it off with the touch of a button. And that's the problem with Bitcoin. I know they say, oh, you got this blockchain technology and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's nice, but you know what? The government
can... Let me ask you, have they got a spokesman yet?
No. No.
You know, if the spokesman, emerges out of there, and some kind of an organization from the truckers themselves, if we can get a message to them, we can assist them in some way, maybe by making contact with the individuals who collected that money, and if necessary, do a notice and demand, and even pull into the federal courts for them if necessary. But, trying to get the money to them is the key thing, because they've been ripped off and ripped off. And these people... Look at what I saw was subversion of what they were doing. That's what I saw when I saw a group of people come out there. Four people, I understand. I don't know the details, but what I heard, four people did this, and they've been silent. So there's a game going on, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts, if left alone, all that money is going to be funneled to lawyers. That's where it's going to go. It's going to go
Absolutely.
To lawyers.
We know that.
And we need to help them take it back and take it away and use it for what they need. But anyway, if anybody becomes aware of some kind of a connection and it can help us make a connection to some kind of leadership out there, we'll assist them. Maybe they have to create a charter, and maybe they have to get together and do a resolution. And that's not a big thing. We can help them write all that stuff up and put it together and do a notice and demand and whatever's necessary legally. So anyway, just want to get that word out there.
DJ Dichter, I can't spell it now. D-I-T-C-H-E.
Are you giving me a name of a person?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, he's one of the four, and he's the spokesperson of that group.
Okay. Why don't we talk then, and we'll see if we can make that. Now, that's the person who collected the money, right?
No, he didn't collect the money, but he was part of that group.
Okay, but hold it. Are they, this person, is he connected with the truckers out there or connected with the individuals who collected the money?
Yes, he organized the individuals.
Okay, then what we need to do is make contact. We'll talk about that.
I'll get you his contact information.
Okay.
The problem with the ones that have their fingers on the money right now, they really got nothing to do with the trucker. They're all politicians and operatives, basically, from what I heard. So if this guy is actually a trucker and he's connect with them, I guess that's the guy that should be gone with, you know? So anyway, it's a shame they didn't think of this before they went ahead and did what they did. They had everything planned pretty good, you know, but these details were important and they dropped the ball on them. And so taking a chance.
It's sporadic. It's you know, naturally. I think
John's just talking in the background in here. Anyway, that's what's going on, and we should watch closely because it's going to have a lot to do with our own battle here. And you know, there's going to be big, big shortages. It's not going to come back right away. I mean, I can't get parts right now for cars, and it's only going to get worse. And it's not going to get fixed overnight. They're closing down. You know, when a factory has to close down a production line, they lose some ridiculous amount of money, like $70 million an hour or some crap like that. And that's why this is hurting everybody. And it, of course, it's hurting. Even the New World Order operatives, you know what I mean? They depend on that money themselves. So that's why this trucker thing hit the heart of the nations, all the nations. And so your New World Order are running in a panic right now. They're scared. And the trouble is when you get somebody like that has no morals or anything else, and you back them into a corner. You never know where they're going to go. They'll do some crazy stuff. And they'll make mistakes, and that's a good thing. But they also could do some attacks and false flags to change the narrative, and that's what we need to watch out for now in the next couple of weeks here, you know, that they don't, you know, they want to start World War III. The only reason they're talking, beating the war drums over there is because they're losing so bad on the COVID and stuff every place else. That's a attempt of theirs to control the narrative, which they have lost right now. They're lost the narrative. And, you know, it's like when you're in a boxing match and you got a guy reeling, you don't let off on him, you go harder. But anyway, we got some people that came in the queue. I want to open Jay from North Carolina and see what he has to say today. So, without further ado, Hey,
Gerard. This whole thing started in Canada because, you know, 90% of the truck drivers up there are vaccinated. But they started asking, they were demanding proof of vaccination at the scales. When a truck driver crossed the scale, and if they couldn't prove it, they put them into a 14-day quarantine.
Yeah, so they got draconian, in other words.
Yeah, so that's why this started in Canada, because you couldn't no longer drive down the road unvaccinated.
Right.
Without I heard
GoFundMe pay me or something like that. There's two of them.
Yeah, yeah. That second one, GoFundMe stopped the payments on the other one, but the new one that they've got almost another 10 million in, the government is going to confiscate that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That's a problem because, you know, look at the government, they have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
so that amazing Polly videos, is that the paralegal that's running around up there giving everybody advice?
No. Amazing Polly, she's Polly St. George from Canada. She just runs an internet site and she does news and comments, but she's very good at drawing, asking questions and drawing lines.
And she ran across those paralegals that were out there helping the truck drivers. That's what I was going to comment on.
Okay.
There's paralegals up there that have brochures printed out talking about the common law. And they're saying everything that we've been saying. When the police were confiscating gas cans, they were telling the people, don't consent. They can't do anything with you without consent. If you don't consent, you know, don't block them from stealing your gas cans, but just tell them, I'm not going to stop you from stealing my property, but I don't consent. So,
and I'm going to take your picture and your badge number and your name, and I'm going to sue you personally under color of law for what you're...
Exactly. That's exactly what they were saying. And I was going, oh, my God, I didn't know they could do that in Canada, too. But these two paralegals up there are doing that and helping they're helping the truck drivers out up there saying exactly what we've been saying forever.
Also, there's a group that Michael Martin, I mean, look at the vaccine and the truckers, it's all woven into one thing, you know what I mean? It's all about control, it's all about the New World Order. But there's a group there that Michael Martin set up that has drawn up paperwork, but they're using our grand jury books and stuff off our sites. I meant to tell John that. I discovered it when I was on my other show. And I went in and looked at their PDFs. There are PDFs. And we need to look into that. We need to make contact with them because they have our old sheriff book in there. And I hope they didn't get them from that guy Robinson from up in Maine that's been stealing our stuff, which we should put the kiboshes on that because that's our intellectual property. That stuff that John wrote that he should not be using. He doesn't really have our permission to do what he's doing. But I don't think that he has anything to do with that because I think they just went on the site and pulled our stuff out because we offered it for free. We tell people that they can take that stuff and they can print it. Well, they did. But this is a feather in our cap, and we should try to make contact with them because, you know, they're using our materials. Maybe they don't know about our new book. They got the old sheriff's manual that was in there a year ago or whatever. And that's what's on their website, and it does say National Liberty Alliance. It does give us, you know, credit for it. But I can't remember.
I think it was one of those Amazing Polly videos I was watching, and they're confiscating gas cans, and they're trying to help them. I can't remember the name of the group that was handing out the flyers, but they were trying to tell everybody to go to this site. I think it's like knowyourliberty.com or something.
There are more than a few common law groups up in Canada that have been fighting the government and winning.
Speaking of the law books or the sheriff books, I ordered two of the sheriff books. One was supposed to go to my sheriff and one was supposed to come to me, and I haven't gotten that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's John or Jan, you have to talk to about that. That's above my pay grade.
Okay.
But I'm sure that...
Yeah, Jay, what you want to do is give me a call tomorrow. We'll talk about it. You got my number, right?
Yeah.
Give me a call. We'll talk about it. I'm not aware of that, and we'll get something out to you right away. The other thing I'd like to just say...
I don't know if my sheriff has gotten it. I know my sheriff...
I'll let you know. What county are you in North Carolina?
Yancey County, North Carolina.
Yancey? I'll let you know tomorrow if he's got one or not yet. And just let me make a note here concerning the common law up there in Canada. Any country where the people are declaring the common law and believe that they got the common law, they got every single right that we have. because our rights yep. have not come from the Bill of Rights. The right, the Bill of Rights was made in order to codify it for the purpose of putting the government on notice. Don't screw around with this stuff. And but they don't have that kind of a thing. But nevertheless, if they got the common law, and they do, and the people believe they have the common law, you're not going to hold that back if the people get educated in the common law and execute it. And they can execute it as strongly as we can.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Very good. Anything else, Jay?
No, but you should try to look up that video about the them confiscating the gas cans, but it's one of those amazing poly videos. It's her and then she's together with a guy with a beard, right?
Is that right? Yeah. No, she normally does her thing out of her home.
I've never seen her with
that. Oh, no. This is actually a video with there's a guy with a beard and a woman running around up there on the streets, and they actually have like a remote mic that they actually gave to this paralegal while she was in, you know, she jumped into the middle of this while they were trying to take the gas cans, and she's like, no, don't talk, don't, they're trying to twist your words, and don't do this, and actually in the middle of it, the guy, you know, was kind of confused, and they got him to sell the gas cans to another guy for $1. Because he knew what was going on. So now they're going, okay, now you can't arrest him because he doesn't own them anymore.
Yes.
It was pretty great.
If there's ever a time for a committee of safety, it's in Canada. They should be doing committee of safeties all over the place up there.
If I can find that video again, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just watching this stuff go, you know, while I'm going down the road. It's just like playing in the background, you know. But,
that's a good point that Gerard just made, the Committee of Safety. You know, that they should organize, the truckers should organize a Committee of Safety and execute, resolutions and even a charter at this point. It could be a limited charter, it doesn't matter, but they should get a charter going and get their money, and if they're not getting it, do a notice and demand. And again, we can assist them with all that. We'll see if we can't make contact with them.
Yeah.
And somebody came on and said, you know what, wherever you are in the world, at 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 8 o'clock, you should honk your horn for a minute in solidarity with the truckers up there.
Yeah, because
so
that's what they started.
Noon and 8 p.m. Yeah. Honk your horn for a minute.
That's one of the things they did up there to start the draconian thing was arresting people for blowing their horns.
Yeah. Yep.
Jackasses.
Yep.
But anyway, we're not going to make to everybody, so I got to move on here. We only got a few minutes.
Yeah.
Michael from Michigan. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Gerard. This is Mike from Michigan. Yeah, you just brought up something with my mind, too, and it's like John was speaking of too, it all evolves back to getting an organized committee to have people with knowledge, numerous people with knowledge, so they can hash back and forth what the lawfulness of their action should be. But beyond that, John said something earlier pertaining to the courts and his contact with the courts. And what he said, John would be in the presence of the court, I take it, and he would say, what court are we in? Of course, he's going for jurisdiction, and jurisdiction must be proven. But I'm assuming when John approached it that way, he was already in his own court.
Any paperwork he sent in would have been done with that team. If you go look at the
paperwork. Absolutely. We did open up a court of record. They hijacked this court of record from the state court, which is where we opened it up, brought us into jurisdictions unknown, refused to tell us the jurisdiction. At least three, maybe four times I asked on the record what jurisdiction we're in, and the last time I asked, well, are you going to tell me what jurisdiction we're in? She said, absolutely no. I informed her that the law requires jurisdiction to be on the papers, and it's not there. And how could anybody be expected to defend themselves if they don't understand the jurisdiction we're talking about. And, and that's a federal judge. We were pulled into a federal court, Southern District of New York.
So this goes to show you how bad they are.
So, John, without further actions by you against their unlawfulness, what what was I going to say? Is it just in limbo pending on you going after them, or?
Yeah, I think it is just in limbo because he's got to do a notice and demand or something.
No, no, what we're doing right now with that court, with that particular court, and we got two cases before the same judge. They did the same thing in both cases. And we're going directly. Look, they're an inferior court. They're administrated. They're either under civil law, which is unlawful, or they're under equity in some kind of a quasi, I don't know what you would even call it. But no matter what it is, a court of record is superior. And we can go after them and sue directly. We're not going through any appeals. We're suing directly and going after the U.S. attorney for fraud on the court because they also conspired to bring back individuals that it was the IRS, was one of them. There was some collection agency and some other individuals, and they all defaulted. And even though I filed the default papers and the judge went through all kinds of stuff, you know, chastising them and blah, 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 and said, well, they really didn't mean it, so I'm letting them back in. I mean, where is that written in their firm rules that we could never get past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just they're all frauds. They're criminals. And we're going after them.
Yeah. And then you got to go after them personally. So,
and then are you speaking about going personally after their bonds?
Well, that's a possibility, yes.
Definitely going to do the bond thing, especially that it was brought to the surface recently. There's been conversation last week and this week on it, and I'm looking at it, and it's very powerful. We're familiar with it, but we never really pursued it because we couldn't get any of the judges in New York because none of them have bonds here in New York. But now we're looking at the federal level. And yes, most definitely we're going to be doing a bond thing. We're going after him for multi-millions of dollars. We're violating all kinds of rights, particularly the right of due process, hijacking us into courts unknown, fraud on the court. I mean, the list goes on pretty extensively.
Listen, if they don't have a bond, they need to be arrested immediately, and you can go after them personally for their personal assets.
Right, but somehow here in New York they played a game, okay, with the people using the people's money.
It doesn't matter.
I understand that, but the point is that we're up against a huge thing with that. But it's just another instrument we're going to use. We'll see what happens, but you're right. They need to produce a bond, and it is unlawful. Look, are we going to get them arrested? Well, I don't know that we'll get them arrested.
Well,
are we going to get them indicted? I believe...
If they don't have a bond, they're not in office. Everything they did is null and void. That's why they're balking. And do they even have an oath? Did you ask for their oath?
Well, on the papers, when I always file it, we accept the oaths of all the officers of the court.
Right.
But, of course, but their silence is acquiescence.
Right. And so if you ask to see their oath and bond and they don't produce it, guess what? They're in treason.
Well, I haven't asked to see their oath, and I haven't asked to see their bonds, but that's going to be all part of the process of this next step that I'm going to take in the court here, and just go forward with it. But yeah, going directly to sue the court directly, the officers of the court that are running an unlawful court, and denying people's access to a court of record, and denying us our due process. I mean, again, it's pretty powerful what we have against them, and it's amazing that they've gone this far.
John, those papers, are those papers in the process of presentment to them, or they've already been presented with that?
I'm sorry, say this again.
Going after them. In a suit, have those papers already been introduced to them, or is that still in your writing?
Oh no, I'm writing them. I haven't had the time to write them, but today I made the decision. Tomorrow I'm going to start writing them. So it'll take me a day or two to write the papers and then file them. So I think within the next couple of days I will. I'll post them up online so people can read them and use the thing, however they want to use them. They can use them in their own cases.
There's just one last thing I want to make a comment, Gerard. John, is this, that was awful, awful and empowering information that I heard pertaining to bonds when they went after these school systems. That was so powerful.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, you see that, I meant to bring that up when I was talking earlier with Thomas and others, that that is some of the things they need to be doing on the grassroots level. But first of all, you have to go with an olive branch, talk to, this is why it's so important to bring your, to get your paperwork together. You serve the paperwork to the different governments, the agencies, or the schools, or whatever you're going to be talking to. You let them know what, you give them, get them a copy of your charter, you get them a copy of your resolutions. You try to get the sheriff on board, where maybe you can even get his signature. We do have part of that as part of the plan, to get the signature of the sheriff on board if he's willing. But with or without that signature, you go forward, you get the paperwork to them, you make the appointment, we're coming up to talk to you, and you bring the olive branch. If they reject and arch their backs up, well, that's when you start moving and you pull the bonds and start working that process and bring them back into submission. So, you know, we haven't written that part into our plan, but we will write that into our plan. We're relying a lot on that group that's going out there that's doing this kind of thing, and it's exactly what the Committees of Safety will be doing and should be doing. But I don't think it's going to be that. You see, again, once you start to organize, you get the sheriff on your side, you're nice, you bring the paperwork, you lay out the law to them, I think you're going to get a lot of these different government agencies or different things that are controlled by governments like the schools and things to comply. I think a lot of it's going to work with compliance.
John, finding the bonds and any given county or state, is that something that that should be in print within that?
Well, it's got to be registered, and I would presume a lot of the bonds would be registered with the county, with the courts. It's just a matter of going to the clerk of the court to get a copy of the bonds. I mean, that's okay. The process I'm going to go through. But with something like a school or something, or some place where bonds are required, and it's not in the court system but in the political process, I'm sure if it's local government particularly, which basically almost everything we're dealing with is mostly local, because you know, you have the state and the federal. But yeah, I'm sure it's probably registered in the county building.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to the county clerk.
Yeah. Okay. One last thing that Brent said tonight, that, you know, you really don't think of this, but of course it's completely true. But when he says you have knowledge, that acts on your conscience.
Knowledge is power. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you used the word conscience. That was really powerful. So, okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for your information and thoughts tonight.
Well, we're actually out of time. I think I'm going to open Walt up and let him say what he's got to say.
All right. All right. Blessings, everybody.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Walt. I give you a minute.
I was listening to the common law attorney tonight. I want to add this, if I may. What must be used and will be used is the most powerful, deadly weapon in the universe. As the scriptures say, as we get closer to the redemption process here, the kingdom will be preached.
Amen.
The true government must come to replace the rulers of darkness in this new world order. That must be done and will be done. And
absolutely. Isaiah 14, also the judgment upon the kingdom of Satan in this world, ultimately the governments. But
yes, and what must be said here, just one example. The truth has to be told. When you look at the six-pointed hex star, and you look at any good dictionary from years ago that's not going to hide it, you will see that represents sorcery, witchcraft, and evil. King David of the Israelites would never use that star over the kingdom of Israel. He would never do that. He'd be forbidden to do things like that. So when we say the star David, I'm going to say the whole world is under deception. It is the star David, but not King David. It's the star of David Rothschild. He used that six-pointed hex in 1780 over his red sign. That's the first time you see it. And also, you have to look at how you can use the scripture now, the sword of the Spirit, to back this up. Look at Revelation chapter 2:9 and 3:9. John the Apostle will tell you there are going to be those. We're keeping this thing covered up so you can't see it, but now just preach the kingdom. The real government's coming, and there's you got these people who are counterfeit, wolves in sheep's clothing, saying they are the true Jews. Look at Revelations 2:9 and 3:9, and look on the internet today. Look at, I think they call themselves the ascetics over there and in London. They're burning that six-pointed hex flag. So they know the truth. So that's all I wanted to say for the tonight. And I'm glad you have been given the opportunity to say that.
Okay.
To John and to Gerard.
Yep, thank you. That was interesting. I'm going to end with that. I'm sorry there's a couple people still in the queue, but we'll have to get you next time in the interest of keeping these things to 2 hours. Thank you very much, everybody. So we'll see you next week, same time. God bless. Pray for Canada, and let's get our Committee of Safeties going. Okay, have a good night.